Don't you tell me that it wasn't meant to be.
You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Bruno Major. You know, it's a great thing when you can tell that people are responding to the music, not sponsorships or haircuts, but simply the music, the songs. Bruno Major is one of those artists who is just about his songs. His latest project, A Song for Every Moon, saw him craft and release a song a month for an entire year. Clearly a stimulating endeavor, but one with its obvious stresses. Within this talk, Bruno and I go into what those stresses were, the expected and the unexpected, and the challenges that came with just sticking to such a goal. We recorded this chat at the New York City Public Library during a particularly rainy day, and it's quite fitting ambiance for how the several topics we discussed in this talk. This is the 405 Exchange with Bruno Major. Enjoy. But won't you do something for me? Don't you tell me. So I miss London all the time, and you live in Camden, right?
Yes, that's right.
That's a place full of musical history, and I wonder, what was it like for you to create art there? Because I imagine that's one of those places you only go to when you think about creating.
It has been an amazing place to create. I've lived there with my brother for nearly 5 years now, and it's just like being at a music festival the whole time. The nearest place that I've felt like in America that is like Camden is Venice Beach in LA.
Yeah.
It's got a similar vibe. But it's just been a very inspiring place. It's fairly central as well, so it's easy to get everywhere, and more friends come party at our place. And it's been a great place to be.
Yeah, and one of the cool things about living there is like it's such in close proximity to places like the Forum and the Roundhouse. Like that has to feel pretty cool.
Yeah,
you could just always go to rooms like that. Like.
And lots of pubs.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, you know, last year you found yourself releasing a new song every month. I'm sure people have been asking you loads about that. But I think why everyone's so fixated is just like that's one hell of a tall order. Like, what was that like for you to do though?
You know, originally my plan was to do a song every month for the rest of my life. And I was
told that's insane.
Well, yeah, but I just thought, fuck it, I'll just do it. And my manager talked me out of it. We ended up doing a song every month for a year. And actually, it was going surprisingly well. I had like halfway through, I think it was when I was either making Just the Same or Fair With a Friend. I just had a major freak out. I think because people started listening. And I actually felt like I had pressure that I had to deliver it.
Yeah.
Because people would know if I hadn't. And I had to make some lifestyle changes. Like, I started going to the gym every day. I started not partying so much, not drinking.
Yeah.
I really had to, like, focus and become this kind of, like, monk.
Yeah.
You know? But it was an amazing thing. And actually, the pressure became very inspiring and very freeing in a weird way, because I knew that at the end of each month I had to release something.
Would you say in some ways like going through that pressure was almost like the first time in your life you've been through like not pressure obviously but like a very confined isolated form of pressure?
Well, I remember at school I was always the kid who would do his homework from the holidays.
Oh, you were?
On the last day.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's the same thing. I like knowing that there's a deadline that I have to do means that I can't waste time and do anything else. So.
Yeah. Well, I think what's really cool about hearing you talk about it in that way is like I feel like for maybe some people that sounds obvious, like oh, go to the gym and like stop partying less. But like when you really find yourself focusing on a singular thing or a set of things, it just shifts your whole mental state in a lot of ways.
It did. I mean, it was exhausting. I actually ended up in hospital at the end of it. I had like actual exhaustion.
Really?
After I released the final song, yeah, because it just been I just hadn't done anything else for a year. I hadn't traveled. I'd just been stuck in my studio, like making music, in this weird like groundhog loop.
Man, and the fact that now that you're touring and you're like playing these songs again, it's like you've lived with these songs for so long, like.
I haven't. I mean, I actually think it's been in terms of that, it's been fairly normal because normally, you know. A band will record an album over a period of 3 months or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But they've been writing those songs for a long time, and normally they've been gigging those songs for a long time, so I feel like actually some of the songs still feel very fresh to me.
Yeah.
Because, like, for example, like Places We Won't Walk, I think that was the one before the penultimate song, so the, like three before the end. Mm-hmm. I wrote that month, and then we immediately started taking out on the road. So like that song still feels like exciting and new to me.
Really?
Yeah.
That's really interesting. That, you know what, reading up on you, something that really intrigued me. I read like some interviews that you've done and like saw some of the things you've talked about. And something that really intrigued me, I don't even know if you're aware of this, but you tend to associate songs with places in a very particular way. I wonder if all that's right. something you've ever noticed.
Like, in what way?
Like I've noticed, like for example, you were saying how easily it sounds almost like Silver Lake to you. Like yeah. for some reason you reference that place of that song.
I wrote that in Silver Lake.
Oh, hence.
I don't think this is even a subjective thing. I think art is a product of its environment. It doesn't matter what form of art it is. But, you know, if I was born in India or if I was born in South Africa, the music that I would be making would undoubtedly be different because it would be a result of my context growing up. And the music that I've, and stimulus that I've osmosized over my growing up period. So when you listen to music from Australia, when you listen to music that comes out of London, it sounds a certain way. And I think that when I wrote Easily, it feels like I was in LA. It has that feeling. LA has a very uplifting, sunny, like chilled out vibe. And there's no way I would have written Easily unless I was like a bit stoned on a balcony at 4 p.m. in Silver Lake, you know.
Well, tell me this, do you feel like that, what you just described in terms of how location can inspire music, do you feel like that's something you found yourself innately knowing while you're writing music, or is that something you realize after the fact?
I think I know. That's why I like London. I think it feels very real, in the same way that New York feels very real. In fact, sometimes New York feels more real than London.
Do you know what's funny? I usually say to people the other way around. I grew up in London as a kid, yeah. and I go back whenever I can. And something I like to tell people is that for as diverse as New York is and how sporadic it could be, I feel like London has a very more potent energy, where I feel like in New York, you can find your little like crevices where you can still find like people yeah. who are very insular. But I feel like London, the diversity and the energy is so much more in your face in a way.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite blunt. It's like you can see the crack, the dirt in the corners, and I like that. And then people tell you exactly what they think. Like in LA, they say there's no such thing as a bad meeting in LA.
Yes. You know? No such thing as a bad lunch.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like. Yeah. Well, I don't think I know this about you, but I know like you're in Camden now. But were you born and raised there, or did you find yourself?
No, I actually grew up in a place called Northampton.
Oh, okay. I'm familiar with Southampton, so that's
cool. Oh, okay. Yeah. Northampton is the other one.
Yeah, I don't really ever meet people from Northampton. Like,
yeah, it's a cool, you know, there's a bunch of musicians that come out of there. It was all right, you know, it was very quiet and peaceful and safe.
We spent a lot of time in Southampton as a kid, and when people in the States ask me to describe it, I like to tell them that there's not really much you can tell.
Yeah, exactly. It's, I sometimes refer to it as a cultural vacuum.
Yes.
But I moved to London as soon as I could. And I didn't write songs until I got there.
Really?
I got to London, yeah.
Wow, was that almost kind of like, I don't want to say like the goal, but was that the type of thing where you felt like, until I'm in the place where creativity is all around me, I probably won't be able to feel inspired in that sense?
I just wasn't inspired. It wasn't an inspiring place. That's the honest truth of it.
I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah, and also like, I don't know, I feel like I didn't have anything to say. I'm always in awe of, in wonder at people that write albums when they're like 17, 18 years old. It's like, the kind of songs that I write about, like I had to fall in love and get dumped a few times, you know?
No, I think a prime example of that, what you just described, someone like Laura Marling even, like when you listen to her first record, you're like, how did you write this at like 16, 17?
Yeah. Yeah, I would have been writing songs about like who I sat next to in maths.
You know, I'm going to ask you about the videos for some of your songs. But before I do, I'd love to talk to you about film. Would you say you're quite a film buff?
I like movies. I don't think I would call myself a film buff, no.
Yeah, well, what would you say is like one of your favorite films or some of your favorite films?
I think my favorite film ever is Blade Runner.
Really?
The original Ridley Scott, Final Cut. Yes. In fact, just the scene where that Replicant gives his soliloquy about the things that he's seen and that we wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
The Tears and Rain monologue. That's my favorite moment in theatre, in film.
That is really top. Like, the reason I ask you this is because, like, watch something that's really interesting with your videos is it feels like for you particularly the aspect of tone and the way your songs are conveyed is very important to you. Would you say that's fair to say?
In my videos?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I work with a director called Louis Bowes.
He's a friend of mine. I was going to bring him up too.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. He's actually on tour with us right now.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I thought he was back in the... Oh, shit.
No, he came like 2 days ago because we're filming a video for one of my songs. So he's kind of following us around.
That's hilarious. I met him on the road with Bombay Bicycle Club a couple years ago.
We
learned each other from there. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Thanks, bro.
Nice.
Flat white.
Thank you.
But he is a film buff.
Yes, he is.
He could chat to you for hours about some niche French movie.
I love that dude dearly. You know, tell me, like, what was it like when you guys met? And what's it been like to work with him? Because
I've actually known Louis for years.
Really?
We were in a band together back in the day. Yeah, like
for
my
people
first,
listening,
my
Louis
first
also plays keyboards as well, to give him context. So.
Yes. But yeah, it was like my first ever band, and we were in that together, and then he went off and became a video director, I went off and became a singer-songwriter, and then here we are.
That's so
making
funny, man.
Stuff together.
Like, I want to talk about the videos, like talk about the latest video that came out for Easily, because it almost has like a Coen Brothers vibe to it, and it's a really, like, surreal but funny video in some ways.
Thank you. I consciously wanted to bring a little reverence to my videos because I think my music is sincere, it's quite romantic, which I love, but I'm not always a sincere person, and I think that with some, you know, if I was walking through a cornfield at 4 p.m, a golden hour, like staring lustfully into a camera lens with my acoustic guitar, like, I think it would be too much.
It would just be quite untrue in a lot of ways.
It would go too far. So I think the goal with Louis was to create, you know, bring that side of my character out as well. And he has this really unique brand of like dark humor.
Yeah.
That I think works quite well.
Yeah, that's very true. And I won't spoil it, but the last part with the ball was pretty funny. How many takes did that? Like, how many takes?
One take.
Thank fuck for that.
One take. And the guy nailed it. The guy nailed it, but everyone was really worried about it. We had to do, like, test throws and stuff.
I could just imagine now, like the email change with the email chain with the label representative going, like, so this is the part of the video, and they're like, what? You're going to do what now?
I don't have a label, so...
Oh, I didn't know that. Like,
I'm fully independent, bro. I'm proud of it.
That's mental. Because fucking doing the Chance the Rapper.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah, right?
That's the goal.
Exactly. Like, you know, talk to me about the video for Just the Same. That's another really great one.
Again, did it with Louis. I wrote that song about the kind of the feeling that love sometimes isn't the nicest thing in the world. Sometimes it can feel like quite an unhealthy, like dark emotion. Louis brought that out. It's hard to talk about that video without spoiling the story.
Yeah.
But I also think it was sort of Louis' own commentary on his perception of my solipsism.
I'm always fascinated by the words people use to describe such things. But it goes back to what you're saying in terms of, like, writing from a sincere place and being in a place like London and having experiences where it's like, you know, I think it's fair to say in a lot of ways, you don't go to cities like New York and London to have, like, Disney stories, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
In terms of how romance develops and experiences you have with people.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, going back to what I was saying before about the tone, because and knowing that you're independent, obviously, you would have a big hand in, like, how these videos are developed, edited, and how they would work. And, like, when you see the videos after the fact, like, when Louis is done editing them, and you see how harmonious the tone is, how does it make you feel as an artist, knowing that your songs are being conveyed in that way?
It feels great. And actually, when Easily came out, the morning it came out, I watched them all in a row, because we did Just the Same, then we did Cold Blood, then we did Easily.
Yeah.
And they linked together really well. I'm really happy with him. There's been minimal editing. When Louis sends through the final draft, there's like, I'm normally like, yeah, that's great.
That's awesome, man. Big testament to Louis, though. You know, going back to the music, when reading on you, there's a moment you described that there was a bit of a shift, particularly when you were making Fairweather Friend. Mm. I wanted to have you talk about that in that time of your life. Like, what did you feel changed for you?
I don't know. I think it was a question of not thinking. I think I've realized that I overthink, and that creation, like when you're really inspired and you make something and you're really in the moment, it's the same as if you're writing a song, whether you're like doing a guitar solo, whatever it is. When you really have a special moment where you're really free and it's flowing, you're not thinking at all. You're just kind of channeling from your subconscious.
Yeah.
And I think when it got to that month, the Fair with a Friend or whatever it was, I was thinking too much, and I made this thing, and I just realized after 2 weeks that I just didn't like what I'd made, so I started again.
Yeah, and I imagine, I mean, what marvels me about that is that I think for some people who aren't familiar with what it's like being an artist, I feel like a lot of the times, and you know, correct me of course if you think I'm wrong, I think there's also a lot of like plausible deniability where you almost tell yourself, if you know you don't like something, you almost tell yourself like, am I right in this? Like, do I know I don't like this? So I think it says a lot when you can realize you didn't like that song and that you allowed yourself to accept that.
Yes, it was a horrible realization because I only had a week left, you know.
Yeah. You know, again, to those listening, your project, A Song for Every Moon, was releasing a song every month. You know, tell me, what do you feel the experience, I mean, because something about that experience I think is very significant to people. It's just like, you hear about that, and of course people think about all the work that went into it, but you know, that's past now, and now you're like out here touring and you have these songs. What do you feel it is about that experience that changed you as an artist?
I think that it was, I'd always had this recurring nightmare where I couldn't leave my flat, and I'd get to the door and realize that my trousers weren't on, or like I didn't have my phone or my wallet or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I think it was related to the fact that I just hadn't released any music. I had nearly 400 songs sitting on my laptop, and I'd never released them because I was always waiting for that perfect record. I was always searching for the album, you know. I wanted to make this album, and I wanted it to come out and be the best representation of myself, in the same way that you only put the photos on Instagram that are from the correct angle with the right filter, because you want to present yourself to be the most attractive version of who you are.
Yeah.
And I realized that, like, I couldn't do that, and I didn't want to do that. And so doing A Song for Every Month forced me to not be a perfectionist. I didn't have time to be a perfectionist. I didn't have time to worry that like the mic was 1 or 2 inches away from the guitar, or that I'd use this mic or that mic on the piano. It forced me just to throw things into the project and see the bigger picture. And as a result, the album is kind of rough, you know. Like there is stuff about every song that I would change if I could. But at the same time, I'm glad I can't, because like the rawness is what makes it what it is.
It was really interesting talking to you a little bit before I hit the recorder, because we talked about some of the different methods that you use in recording. But when I listened to the album, it did feel very cohesive. Like that really struck me, when knowing that these songs all existed at different points in a year, mm. and how they still came together. I mean, you really achieved something special in that.
Thank you very much, man.
Yeah, of course. You know, you're going on tour in a couple weeks with Sam Smith.
Correct.
You know, it's funny, a few weeks back, we had your fellow tour partner, Louis Capaldi, on the show. And
cool.
The episode that with him actually just came out today, so it's actually pretty meta that I'm talking to you.
Amazing.
But how's it feel knowing that tour is coming up? That's crazy.
It's pretty crazy, man. I have never played in an arena before, so that's going to be cool.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Sam. I've known Sam for a while.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very grateful for the opportunity. It's going to be a very fun few weeks.
Yeah, he's a really true dude, and like I think what's interesting is that a lot of people see where he's at now, and I mean, I can only speak for myself and how I see people talk about him, but I think a lot of people see where he's at now and only see the success, but not aren't aware or don't realize that there was so much slogging leading up to it. Like, I remember, I think it was 2011 or 12, he was here for a summer just trying to get, like, meetings and stuff, and, like, everyone kind of, like, shut the door in his face. And it's mental to think now that he's where he's at, like.
I actually knew, I met Sam before he'd even released Latch.
Really?
Disclosure, and... we did a show together, and he wasn't even, he was actually singing backing vocals, and I was playing guitar for this other person. This is like way before anything happened.
Yeah.
And we were in rehearsals, and I just remember Sam like just opening his mouth and like doing some warm-ups. I was like, holy fucking shit. I had never heard anything like it. Like,
The guy has a
1 in a million voice, and he works very hard, so he deserves, you know, he deserves all of it.
Yeah, like, I'm curious, because you brought up how you've never played arenas before, and like, you know, for people who might be listening who might not be familiar with your music, I mean, there is quite an intimate quality to your music in terms of the vibe you tend to, like, evoke with your music.
Yeah.
Are you curious, not like afraid, of course, because it's going to happen, you can't be afraid of it, but like, do you find yourself curious about how you're going to make that translate within a place like that?
What do you mean?
Like, how are you gonna, like, how are you curious about how the songs themselves are gonna translate within like an arena setting?
I have no idea how they're gonna translate.
I guess that's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a question of just upsizing. I feel like when you play small venues, it feels like you can throw a blanket out of the room, and then you're all under the blanket together, and you share a moment under the blanket. And when you play in bigger festivals, it feels like you're standing on top of a mountain and you just have to shout really loud so that everyone can hear you. So I don't know, maybe arenas is going to be a bit of mountain shouting, but whatever, I'm up for the challenge.
It's good to hear. You know, I only have one more question for you, but you know, thanks for taking the time to chat. You played a show last night, you're going to be playing again, like the last show, yeah, of the tour.
Very last one.
That's insane, man. Like, you know, you've never shielded away from talking about what songs are about, but I wonder if you found new meaning in some of the songs. Like, I wonder if, like, the songs have changed for you over time. I'm curious, a song like Just the Same, for example, does the sentiment of that song feel any different to you now than it did when you first wrote it?
That one, not particularly, because I wrote that about somebody very specific. And that hasn't changed. But some songs can change. That's actually my favorite thing about songwriting, is that you can write a song and it can mean something to you. And then you release it into the universe and people hear it, and to them it can mean something totally different. And sometimes it can actually mean something more to them than it does to you. Like, I have a song called Places We Won't Walk. I wrote that and it was a breakup song, and then my uncle heard it, and it was his favourite song from the record. And then he had a ticket to come to my show in London, and he ended up passing away a week before the show.
I'm sorry to hear.
And his funeral was on the same day as my show, so I couldn't even go to his funeral. And my whole family got a minibus from the funeral and came down to my show in London and surprised me. And I realized as I was playing Places We Won't Walk that suddenly it had this totally different meaning, and the whole lyrics could be interpreted in a different way. Yeah. And that was actually more profound than the original intended meaning of the song.
That's massive. And I mean, that's mind-blowing, because now you always have, I mean, you have that song, so you always, and that memory, you could always associate them with one another. That's really beautiful. Like.
Yeah.
You know, before I let you go, because, I mean, I have to ask this. I'm almost kind of crazy I didn't ask this. Because you played Bowery Ballroom last night. I'm pretty sure the show sold out. That's my favorite room in New York City. What was that like for you, like, playing that room?
Well, 1 year ago, I had a show in London. And I sold 25 tickets.
Whoa.
And most of those were to my friends.
Yeah.
And then 1 year later, I was standing in New York at the Bowery Ballroom at a sold-out show, and it was pretty surreal, really special feeling. I can't believe that it's happened in the space of a year. But I'm really grateful that it has.
Well, I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing where, you know, your career goes. And especially, like, one of my favorite things about this show is that there's people who listen who don't know the music. And I always say this, I'm always excited for people to go like, oh, I don't know this dude, I'm going to check the music out. But when it comes to your music specifically, I'm really keen to see people react to it because it is really a special body of work, man.
Thank you very much, mate. Yeah,
of course. You. Yeah, thanks for finding the time to chat. Really appreciate it.
That's
for
me.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean we shouldn't try.
Try.